It's a beautiful day today, and in the midst of lots of different tribulations and turmoil in the world today, it's good that we were able to come together. So I wanted to start in Hebrews chapter 11, which is referred to quite often as the faith chapter. And one of the things that's interesting is it not only has a definition of faith in verse 1, which you've all heard, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, but it also walks through really a lot of the history in the Old Testament up to a certain point. And it does that by commenting about various people in the Bible and their faith. For example, verse 4, by faith Abel offered God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. By faith Enoch was translated that he should not see death. Let's see, verse 6, but without faith it is impossible to please him, for he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is the rewarder of them that diligently seek him. By faith Noah, by faith Abraham, by faith Sarah, etc. It goes through really a history of many of the historical people in the Old Testament. And it comes down eventually, talks about Moses, talks about Joseph, Jacob, of course Abraham, Joseph, Jacob, Moses, all the way down to around verse 32, where it says, and what shall I more say, for the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, and of Barak, and of Samson, and of Jephthah, of David also, and Samuel, and of the prophets. Prophets all the way to John the Baptist. Could be very well what it was referencing, all the prophets going forward, not only in the past. It also says, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Now, the thing I wanted to highlight here is this is giving a history, and it's talking about faith at the same time. I also want to build a little bit of a context for my main topic of discussion, and I'd like to speak on the book of Ruth. And the book of Ruth is really a book that at one point in time was considered part of the book of Judges, and is a story, a true story that is told that occurred during the time of Judges, which is why at one point it was considered part of that book. And the book of Judges is a very interesting book because in the history of the Israelites, after they were brought out of Egypt, God doing the work with Moses, bidding his direction. As they came out of Egypt and then they went through the 40 years in the wilderness because of disobedience, and then eventually crossed over into Canaan's land after that 40 years and drove out at least a portion of the Canaanites out of that land. They didn't drive out everybody as God told them to do. And ended up that the Israelites at this point in time were ruled by God. They were not ruled by a king or any specific one leader. Someone like Joshua, for example, that was basically responsible for providing some level of direction. And eventually Joshua passed on. And the Israelites kind of started let's just say they were not always focused on God as the ruler of their land and their all their tribes. There were 12 tribes of Israel at that point, scattered across, not scattered, but across the Canaan's land in different areas. So because of the disobedience, and some of that was intermarrying with some of the Canaanites, it was an idolatrous group of people that were there, and it caused the Israelites to stray from God, the one and only. And of course, I'm trying to describe this in my own words. And ultimately, there were the good Lord sent judges. And those judges were sent with the purpose of restoring the Israelites back to a God-centric direction. And each time, after the judge was put forth, one of those judges, one of the most well-known, of course, was Samson. Gideon was another one. Last week, Brother Randy spoke and mentioned Gideon and conquering 135,000 army strong, an army that was strong with 135,000 with 300 men using lamps and ram's horn, etc. That was another one of the judges. And this very well was probably the time frame that for which Ruth was involved in her story, or her story occurred. So what I want to do is parallel a little bit of what we see in the book of Judges with what we see in our world this very day, because there's a lot of similarities. You stray from the good Lord, you get into trouble, you say, oh God, please help us. God sends a judge who rescues his people, and then what happens once they're rescued and everything's good again? They stray again, right back to where they were. And what do we see in this country today? 244 years ago yesterday, Declaration of Independence for this country, and it was very focused on God, and as was later the Constitution. It was very focused on we get our individual rights from our Creator, and it lists them, etc. And we've seen great prosperity in the United States, and of course, we've gone through many ups and downs over that period of time. Not all good, because we're all sinners, we're human. The country is made up of human beings, but with the blessing of God, this country has become the greatest and strongest country in the history of the world. Most powerful, richest in the history of the world. But today, what we see with a combination of things, and it's not my intent to go through and talk about all of these things, but we see great unrest. And most of that unrest comes from what? Straying away from God. All right? And it's a large percentage of our population. And there's a lot of ways that that's happened through our education system, through our own, how we've raised our own children, and the media, and a wide range of things that you're well familiar with. So, let's, in setting this context, let's go to Proverbs. I've got a new Bible here, so it's a little bit sticky on the pages. So, my apologies for that. I want to go to Proverbs chapter 6. Chapter 6, and I want to go to verse 16. These six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him. Verse 17, a proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, and heart that deviseth wicked imagination, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren. Is that not exactly what we see going on right now in this world? When we watch the media and we see these protests and all this really crazy behavior, we see so much of that. And these are exactly things God says he hates in his word. So if God hates these things and we're doing these things, that's not good. That can be problematic. So a parallel to that, going in today's world, that we see, if we go to 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1, and I want to read the first 7 verses here. "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy." May I have some Kleenex? Excuse me. Okay, I'll go back to verse 2. "For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers." Do we see all this stuff today? "Incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good." Despiser of those that are good. Defund the police. "Traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof, from such turn away." Having a form of godliness, trying to establish their own righteousness. We're good people because we're against bad things, but yet they're all sinners. We're all sinners. Even the statues of the people they're tearing down that were founding fathers, we are all sinners. None of us are perfect. We don't have a perfect country because we're sinners. But in spite of that, if we aspire and try our best to walk in a way that would be according to the good Lord's will, we will be blessed in spite of those shortcomings, in recognizing those shortcomings. But that's not what we see today in a large portion of the population of this country and in really across the world. "For of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with divers lusts, ever learning and never able to come to knowledge of the truth." Not learning and coming to the knowledge of the truth. "Seeking to establish their own righteousness. This is the sign of the end times." Now, in no way am I suggesting that we're at the very end times. I think we're in the latter times. We may be close to the end times. Lord willing, I hope Jesus comes back this very day and takes us home with him. But I am not suggesting that we've seen the worst of it. Because we don't really know, and no man knoweth that day and hour, and that's the way it's going to be until it occurs. Amen. However, I think this is highlighting the fact that we are moving in this direction. And the truth be, we've been moving there ever since the foundation of this country, and even before that, before the United States was even existed. We've been steadily moving in that direction. We just see it accelerating at an exponential rate. So, now that we've talked a little bit about the world that we're dealing with right now, let's go to the book of Judges. Because my intent is not to talk about the world today or what may or may not be happening, but I think you guys all see and understand. So the book of Judges, I want to go to the very last chapter, the very last verse, Judges 21, verse 25. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes, seeking their own righteousness without knowledge, without truth. That's what was happening to the Israelites in between these different judges over and over and over again. Same thing over and over. We see the same thing in today's world over and over and over. You can even look back and say in the last 100 years, World War II and the evil atrocities that happened then that we were able to defeat with God's help, we were able to defeat that, but it's still a continued decline. And I will not go into scripture and verse, but I think everybody in here has been part of the Bible study on Ecclesiastes, right? At one time or another, or most of the times. And what is one of the things we keep hearing? There's nothing new under the sun. It's the same thing over and over and over and over again.
Until the day the Lord comes back, it's going to be the same.
That's right. Is God surprised by any of this? Of course not. So let's talk about the life of someone that was during this time when there was great unrest and how God managed that situation as a way to look at where we, you know, understand or put some perspective on where we are. So the book of Ruth. Now, unfortunately, it's really hard to talk about the book of Ruth without reading almost the entire book. And I've even heard Randy comment that, yeah, you almost need to read the whole book. So we're going to read a lot of it, and I apologize in advance for so much of it. I'll try to comment as we go through this along the way. I'm sorry?
It's a good book.
Yes, it is. So Ruth, chapter 1, verse 1. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. Okay, these were Jewish people that were in Bethlehem, which is in Judah. And they, because of famine that was taking place, I'm sure during a declining period or probably one of the declining periods between the various judges, they decided, the husband decided, we're going to go to Moab in search of a job, fortune, whatever. Now, Moab, if you look at a map at the time, there's Judah, which is the largest physical land space of one of the tribes, and Bethlehem's in the northern portion of that. And then there's the Dead Sea, and to the east is Moab. And Moab is not part of the Israelites' land that God had given to them. But they decided to go over there, leave where they were, where they worshiped, and go over there where it was very idolatrous and they were not centered on the true God. At this rate, it's going to take a long time to get through these verses. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons Mahlon and Chilion, Euphrates of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. So they went to Moab, and Elimelech and Naomi's husband, or Elimelech, I'm not pronouncing that correctly, but I'm an engineer, not an English person. So Naomi's husband died, and she was left and her two sons. So her husband died. Now she's a widow. And they took them wives of the women of Moab. Now this is exactly what God did not want Israelites to do, intermarry, because you're marrying outside the faith. And we know in today's world when that happens, it often creates marital difficulties and strife and problems. And they took wives of the women of Moab. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth, and they dwelled there about 10 years. So they stayed there 10 years. And Mahlon and Chilion died also, both of them, and the woman was left with her two sons, was left of her two sons and husband, meaning they all three had passed on. But she was still with the wives of her two sons. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread. So there was a famine. God came in and rescued them from that famine. She found out about it. She's in Moab. She's without her husband and two sons. She only has these two Moab women daughter-in-laws. And she says, I need to go back to my homeland. Wherefore she went forth out of the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return unto the land of Judah. And Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as ye have dealt with the dead and with me. So evidently they've been good wives to her sons. And she was basically giving them their release to go back to their families, and eventually with the idea that they would marry someone else in the future. The Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband, meaning get married again. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. They were sad that they were departing. And they said unto her, surely we will return with thee unto thy people. So they're suggesting that they might go with her. And Naomi said, turn again, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb that there may be your husbands? And she goes on here and comments that I can't get married again and have sons again and them be at the right age for us to get married, for you to get marry again to my son. So why would you want to go with me? Verse 14, and they lifted up their voice and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. And she said, behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Notice in the King James Version, gods, little g, those idolatrous gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law. So she's, Naomi's compelling or pushing on Ruth, you know, go do the same. And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee. Please, don't push me to leave you or to return from following after thee. And this is a beautiful statement here. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Capital G, my God. Thy God will be my God. Ruth had come to understanding about the God at some level, and therefore wanted to stay with Naomi as she went back into Judah, where the true God was theoretically supposed to be worshiped properly. Verse 17, where thou diest will I die, and there will I be buried. So I'm going to be with you from now on. The Lord do so to me, and more also if aught, but death part thee and me. Only from death will we be apart. When she saw that, verse 18, was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. So the two went until they came to Bethlehem, and it came to pass when they were come to Bethlehem that all the city was moved about them, And they said, "Is this Naomi?" They recognized Naomi was back. And she said unto them, "Call me not Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Why then call ye me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me," meaning taking my sons and my husband, "for the evil of having left this land and gone into Moab, where into an idolatrous nation." So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of the barley harvest. So they had come during the harvest season. Now we go to chapter 2. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. So kinsman, somebody that her husband was related to. Doesn't say exactly what the relation is here, but that they're a kinsman. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said unto Naomi, "Let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace." And she said unto him, "Go, my daughter." So they were hungry. They needed food. And they had gone into this land. And it was a great harvest that was going on. And she wanted to glean ears of corn and anything that fell out of the harvest onto the fields, and hopefully be treated fairly by whoever the owner of the fields were. And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, meaning the harvesters, and her hap was to light on part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was the kindred of Elimelech. So she didn't go intentionally looking for his field, but that's where she ended up. Providence of the good Lord. A blessing that she did not recognize at that point, nor did Naomi. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered him, "The Lord bless thee." So that, you know, obviously Boaz worshiped God and was a godly-oriented man based on these statements. Then said Boaz unto a servant that was set over the reapers, "Whose damsel is this?" So who is this person out here that's gathering up that part of the harvest that's fallen on the field? And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, "It is the Moabitess damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab." And she said, "I pray you let me glean," meaning Ruth, said to him, "I pray you let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." So she came and hath continued even from the morning until now that she tarried a little in the house. Then said Boaz unto Ruth, "Hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens." In other words, stay here and glean from my field. That's what he's saying. Don't go elsewhere. Stay here. Meaning, come back and glean from my field as the harvest occurs. "Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them, after the reapers. Have I not charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? And when thou art athirst, go unto the vessels and drink, and that which the young men have drawn." So in other words, he's making this inviting and supportive of her amongst his reapers. "Then she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto him, Why have I found grace in thine eyes that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? And Boaz answered and said unto her, It hath fully been showed me all that thou hast done unto my mother-in-law," since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother in the land of thy nativity, in other words, Moab, and art come unto a people which thou knewest not heretofore. In other words, you've been very kind to my mother-in-law, and I see this, and therefore I'm supporting you in your efforts here. Maybe it was also something the good Lord revealed to him. The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. It's all of God. Then she said, let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for that thou hast comforted me, and for that thou hast spoken friendly unto thine handmaid, though I be not like unto one of thy handmaidens. In other words, I'm not one of them, but thank you, you're treating me like I am. And Boaz said unto her, at mealtime, come thou hither and eat of the bread and dip thy morsel in the vinegar. And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched corn, and she did eat and was sufficed and left. So he invited her to eat with him. This is a picture of something that is quite beautiful, and we'll talk about a little later. And when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and reproach her not, and let fall also. So he's telling his reaper, let fall also some of the handful of purpose for her, and leave them that she may glean them, and rebuke her not. So in other words, make sure you're dropping stuff. You're leaving stuff behind for her. So she gleaned in the field even until even, and beat out that she had gleaned, and it was about ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, and she brought forth and gave it to her that she had reserved after she was sufficed. In other words, she saved some back and took it to her mother-in-law. And her mother-in-law said unto her, where hast thou gleaned today? She had no idea where, but she had a lot. And where wroughtest thou? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of thee. And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought, and said, the man's name with whom I wrought today is Boaz. And Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, blessed be he of the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. And Naomi said to her, unto her, the man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen. So this is the time that Ruth learns that Boaz is a kinsman, not necessarily the closest kinsman to her husband's father. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said, he said unto me also, thou shalt keep fast by my young men until they have ended all my harvest. So you can keep coming until the harvest is done. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, that they meet thee not in any other field. So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of barley harvest, of wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. So she's going out every day in the field that belonged to Boaz. Then Naomi, chapter 3, there's only 4 chapters, so chapter 3. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, my daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens thou wast? Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself therefore, and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor, but make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. So basically she recognizes that Boaz could potentially be Ruth's husband because he's a kinsman, and according to Old Testament law, and tradition, which is spelled out this particular about marriage in Deuteronomy 20, chapter 25. It is acceptable for someone who's lost their husband to marry a kinsman who would take over the husband's estate, if you will. Okay? So she recognized this, and she wanted to take care of Ruth because Ruth had done so well by her. And so, let's see. Verse 4, "And it shall be, when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in and uncover his feet and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. And she said unto her, all that thou sayest unto me I will do." In other words, I'm going to do what you said, Naomi. "And she went down unto the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her." And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn, and she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, "Who art thou?" And she answered, "I am Ruth." He had seen Ruth before, but not dressed up, not all fixed up. "I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thy handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." In other words, you're my kinsman. And he said, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning." You get more and more kind. "Inasmuch as thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich." So she wasn't out for her own only. "And now, my daughter, fear not, I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman, howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I." So he recognized he wasn't the closest kinsman. And that meant that he had other traditions that he needed to follow in order for the two of them to potentially get married. Whether he was thinking this at that moment or not, I'm not going to comment on, I'm not sure. "Tarry this night, stay here this night, and it shall be in the morning that if he will perform unto thee the part of the kinsman," meaning the other person, "will perform unto you the part of a kinsman," where he would acquire her husband's estate, if you will, and marry her, "let him do the kinsman part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of a kinsman to thee. As the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning." So he just acknowledged that he would take her for his wife. All right, at this point. "And she lay at his feet until morning, and she rose up before one could know another. And he said, let it not be known that a woman came into the floor. Also he said, bring the veil. So she brought a veil, and he filled the veil with more barley, etc. And then she took it to her mother-in-law, and she told all that she had done. And she had spent the night with him, but because she was a virtuous woman and nobody had seen it, nothing happened inappropriate, and she stayed till morning, and she left. He gave her some barley to take with her to her mother-in-law, and she told all that he had done. And she said, these 6 measures of barley gave he me, for he said to me, go not empty unto thy mother-in-law. Then said she, sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall, for the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day. So she said, you've done all you can do. You need to just stop and rest and be patient and see what happens. Chapter 4. Then went Boaz up to the gate and set him down there, and behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spoke came by. So he's at the gate of the city. not the gate of his land, but the gate of his city, and he waited. And the kinsman that he was referring to when he spoke to Ruth earlier came by. Such one turned aside. Sit down here. He said, sit down and let's talk. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, set ye down. And they all sat down. And he said unto the kinsman, so he had witnesses there, the elders, which is part of the tradition outlined in Deuteronomy and Leviticus. And he said unto the kinsman, Naomi, that has come again out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land, which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, buy it before the inhabitants, before the elders of my people. Anyway, he's basically saying, do you want the land? Do you want Ruth? And the kinsman in verse 6 says, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar mine own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. I can't do these things. And the reason he can't is because he was already married. Verse 7, and this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning redeeming or inheriting, or not inheriting, but purchasing that land and that estate. In Israel concerning redeeming and concerning changing, for to confirm all things, a man plucked off his shoe and gave it to his neighbor, and this was a testimony in Israel. This was a tradition. You take off your shoe, and therefore the kinsman said unto Boaz, buy it for thee. So he drew off his shoe, took his shoe off, saying, buy it for thee. And Boaz said unto the elders and to all the people, the elders, the witnesses, ye are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth, the Moabitess, the wife of Mahom, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren, and from the gate of his place ye are witnesses this day. And all the people that were in the gate and the elders, we are witnesses. The Lord make the woman that is come unto thine house like Rachel and like Lee, which two did build the house of Israel, and do thou worthily, and to be famous in Bethlehem. And let thy house be like the house of Phares, whom Tamar bare unto Judah of the seed which the Lord shall give these. This was referring to some history. So Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife, and when he went unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. So, all of this takes place. I believe by the providence of the good Lord that brought them together. So, I want to make a comment here that Naomi goes to Moab. It was not the right thing to do. And she lost her husband and her sons as a result of that. Not necessarily because God took them, but because she made that choice, something happened and they died. And so she made a poor choice. And when we make poor choices in life, sometimes bad things happen. Doesn't mean God always makes those things happen, but he allows those things to happen. And so she did that. And when she recognized these things, she came back to her original land. And now Ruth, for her focus, or the statement she made in verse 16 of chapter 2 about your God will be my God, that she recognized God Almighty, and she's been blessed as a result of these choices. And God takes this very event, which was making a wrong decision, and turned it into a beautiful, wonderful thing the first of which is the marriage. Okay, but let us continue. She's now had a son. And the woman said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life and a nourisher of thine old age for thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons hath borne him. And Naomi took the child and laid it in her bosom and became nurse unto it. So Naomi's taking care of the child. And the woman, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. So right here, the baby from Ruth that Naomi is taking care of, I'm sure with great joy in her heart, turns out to be the father of Jesse, who is the father of King David. And more importantly, in the lineage of Jesus Christ, who came from that family when he was born on this earth. So Ruth, who is not a Jewish person by nature, by birth, but who is a Gentile by birth, is in Christ's ancestry lineage. This was what God intended, and the story is told here. God took a poor decision and made it into a very important portion of his salvation for his people. Eventually, you get down to verse 22, and it says, Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David. So, when you look at this story as a whole, and you think back to when they were at the table having the meal together with the with Boaz and Ruth and the reapers, Ruth is representative in this story of being the Old Testament law. She's representative of that. That's where she came from. The field where all of the corn and barley and wheat came from represents, in essence, the gospel that's in the Bible. The reapers represent the ministers, the ones that are dropping the morsels for her to pick up. She's in essence attending church services and picking these things up. All right. And she's learning through that process in a representative kind of way. Boaz is a type of Jesus Christ. He's not Jesus Christ, but he's a type. He demonstrates, because what did he do? He wanted all of them to sit together and be equal together and partake of the gospel together. So he was a type of Christ, and he was a good man, and he followed the best he could God and worshiped him and was the type of Christ. And Ruth is all of us. Ruth represents the bride of Boaz, the bride of Christ. We are the bride of Christ through this church. The church is the bride of Christ. And so Ruth represents us in this beautiful picture. So what happens here is, first, two major things occur through all of this. The providence of God taking a poor decision and making something great out of it, something that was part of his plan, in the midst of all of Israel under these various judges going up and down, good and bad, figuratively speaking. Not following God, and yet God's working all the time. And he takes this and he turns it into something that's beautiful. And it's representative of the fact that we are included in the Lamb's Book of Life today, and actually before the beginning of time, because God had this all worked out to begin with, as we know. The second thing is that Ruth is part of the Abrahamic covenant in the sense that it brought into that covenant not just the natural Jews, but the Gentiles. Two major things that come from that. So I want to close. Don't call me Brother Allen. I haven't gone that long. I want to close by going to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Verse 23. But we preach Christ crucified unto the Jews, a stumbling block, and unto the Greeks, foolishness. But unto them which are called, both Jews and Greeks, children of God, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God, verse 25, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For ye see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called, not from their own efforts. But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty, and base things of the world, and things which are despised hath God chosen, yea, and the things which are not, to bring to naught things that are, that no flesh, no flesh should glory in his presence. But of him are ye in Christ Jesus, who of God is made unto us wisdom and righteousness and sanctification and redemption, that according as it is written, he that glorieth, let him glory in the Lord thy God. There is nothing surprising to God when he can work these things over the history of this world and make these provisions for his people, no matter what kind of craziness is going on. And that applies to this very day in the world that we're in, although it's very hard for each one of us to look past those things because we're immersed in it, to hold on to our faith that God Almighty is in charge. He's running the show. There is nothing new under the sun, and he knows it all. And this proves it.